Short turnaround. We'll turn our attention to Collingwood, round two at the MCG. It is Spuds game. Unfortunately, we've had a habit of stinking it up in the Spuds game over the last 3 years now, against Melbourne the first time, then against Essendon in a season-changing loss in 2022, and then against Brisbane in obviously a tricky fixture last year. But Collingwood zipping two. There's always that fear that they'll return to form, but I guess you've got to look at it and say you can't just click your fingers and say, oh, we want to play well now. We haven't been happy with how the last 2 weeks have been, and you've got to look at why it's happening for them. And they're conceding a lot of marks inside 50. When they turn the ball over, they're getting cut up because their pressure is just not quite restricting the way it normally would when they're at their best. Admittedly, they've played the Giants, who are probably the best team in the comp, and Sydney, who are absolutely airborne. So, I mean, they've run into some formidable opposition, but
they might be some of the things that have been best teams in the competition.
They may well be their first and second favourite for the flag, but they, Collingwood, I mean, we've got some weaponry that can do those sorts of things. We can move the ball quickly on turnover. We've got potent forwards that can take marks. We tend to enjoy playing at the MCG. Obviously, we've got to be careful with their matchups in the forward line where, you know, of all the weeks, this is the one where we might miss Jimmy Webster because they've got players like, obviously, Elliott. Then you throw in Bobby Hill that can go down. Even Myatek's obviously a medium-sized forward. You look at McCreary, DeGoey can go forward and play for them as well. When do they pick Johnson again? That type of thing. So they're not a giant side. Mason Cox will float down there, but if he kicks a couple against us, we should fold. It's one of those ones where, look, if we're going to be realistic, if Collingwood click and hit their straps, they'll beat us just simply because they're a level above us, not a huge level above us. We played them last year and lost by a kick without Membry and King in the forward line, and we were finishing like a train. The consensus is that they're, you know, a top two, top four side, and we're trying to play finals, but they're not at their best. We showed enough signs last week that it is a winnable game. I don't think Collingwood are going to walk out and play the way they did in the back end of last year. They might step closer to their best form and they might beat us in a grind and find their way there, but they're not just going to explode back into form, which means they're vulnerable, which means that if we play our cards right, we can win the game. So I think Michael, who's in our comments, described this game, H, as every time you play Collingwood, it's high risk, high reward. It's a great feeling to beat them, but you just can't stand losing to them. But it is one of those weeks where clearly the underdogs, but hell, they're zipping two for a reason.
Yeah, well, I mean, do we look at it as in a way of it's a great time to get them, or you go, oh, no, they're zipping two. This is the worst time you want to get them. It's a tough one because we don't know if they're just not playing well at the moment, or as you're saying, they've played the two best teams in the league. I mean, we don't know where they're at yet. It's a situation of they've played two games. We've only played one. It's a bit weird that they could be playing. They've played two games before we even played our first game. And then, we got the, 5 day break compared to six. It's one of those ones you go, if they do turn up like they did against Sydney, well, I mean, we can play that similar pressure game that Sydney put on them on Friday. Because I was watching that looking, going, Sydney were just at them all night. Pressure, 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 pressure. Ball spills out, they ran to it. Ball spilled out again, they were the first to it. And it just happened all night. Collingwood, when they got the ball, looked great. But that pressure, as soon as they were out, Sydney were there. Sydney were on top of them for most of the night. And, yeah, it was only free play, it seemed to be, that Collingwood actually managed to get out and get free. So it's the sort of play that we look and go, we could replicate that. We could. We know we've got the runners. We know we've got that speed to keep up with teams. Let's hope that we can do that this week. Let's hope that we can find that bit of speed we didn't have on the weekend. As I said, Geelong just dragged us down and held us back and we looked slow. But you go back 2 weeks against North, against Essendon, we were running everywhere. We ran to every contest. We ran to every loose ball. We ran to, and that it just didn't happen on the weekend, but we know that's there. And that's what we have to do this week. We have to be first to it. We have to be on them as soon as they get it. And yeah, we had that ability. That's what Ross looked for. He looked for those runners. So, yeah, let's get out there and just hit them every time they get the ball. get there first to it. I mean, Stocker got to the ball first, but yeah, we'll talk about that later. And yeah,
It's an interesting one because I think there is, despite, like you said, GWS and Sydney both being very, very good teams, there is a bit of a template, I think, in how to play against Collingwood and how to beat them. And I think it goes both ways. You have to force turnovers across half back to be able to slingshot forward in attack and really kind of push the pace when you do win the ball and force a turnover across half back to be able to then quickly switch and push forward, and then you get to isolate guys like Max King. If Max King can play a similar game to what Logan McDonald did, where he was kind of, you know, he'd kind of push up to center half forward, sometimes into the center square, and then as the Swans win possession back and force a turnover, he then doubles back towards goal, so that he's kind of one out with a, you know, hopefully an undersized defender on him, someone who he can run into the ground, someone who he can kind of body a bit more. And the other one is not letting Collingwood do that the other way. We know how Collingwood are so good at absorbing pressure and then really switching. And we've seen it a couple of times over the last few years where, you know, they can be in a bit of an arm wrestle for three and a half quarters and then flick the switch and all of a sudden they go bang, bang, and they're two goals up. And that they've been able to do that really successfully. And I think that we just have to stay with them. We have to stay with them. We have to make sure that we don't give the ball away cheaply to allow guys in the middle of the ground, like your Dacos brothers and Steel Sidebottom and Jordan DeGoey, whatever, to get those, to be able to use their weapons moving forward. We want to make them defend. We want to hold those guys accountable and make them accountable for our guys. And so we can't afford to give the ball away cheaply, and we have to make them fight for it every step of the way. And I think that's kind of the template that both the Giants and the Swans have been able to do really successfully over the first couple of weeks. And I think that, not that it's an easy thing to do, but there is that template. There is that kind of blueprint on how to play against Collingwood. And we have the runners. You know, I think our foot skills in general are much improved over the last couple of years. We didn't get to show it a lot last week because we weren't able to find that space and run. But I think, you know, there will be more time, there will be more space, there will be more run and carry on the big wings and the open spaces of the G. I think that really suits us. Collingwood are probably a better team, but like you said, Parko, not by that much. If we play to our strengths and we kind of are able to, you know, when we don't have the ball, put the clamps on in kind of traditional Ross Lyon style, then I think we match up pretty well.
Got to start well, obviously, because if they're slightly down on confidence, obviously they've won the flag, so their confidence is still going to be pretty high. But if
good,
you can,
good comment from Michael Egan coming in the chat as well,
ranking Ryan Burns' first 49 games in order. Yeah, that was a really interesting. I thought that was a little bit what's the right word? Psychophantic, is that the right word? So,
might get Kelly.
I mean, I love Kelly. He's a ripping fellow, but come on, mate. Yeah, I mean, what about Seb's first 199 for his 200th game? That's a bigger milestone. But yeah, look, I think we've got to start well. If their confidence is low, if you do some of the things to them early that have happened to them in the last couple of weeks, it might get them thinking. We're a hard side to beat in the sense that we've only lost once under Ross Lyon by more than 28 points. So I get the feeling, you know, most of our losses are frustrating because they're close, like that Geelong game was. And I get the feeling this is another one of those, you know, 15 points each way. If we lose, it'll be really difficult to swallow because it'll be tight. And if we win, it'll be hard work. And it's just kind of got that feeling about it. But if they are going to find form, you know, we're probably not the best side to come up against because we'll make them earn that. And if they're slightly off, we've got the weaponry to hurt them. So tough game. But I was hoping we'd beat Geelong under the assumption that we might find it tough against Collingwood. We've just dropped the Geelong game, so beat Collingwood and all square. We'll get back to where we thought we'd wanted to be anyway. So hopefully it can happen that way. Selection, so Liam Stocker, pretty important given the small forwards, as we said. Jack Sinclair looks like he'll probably play. Dan Butler is the other one. And then there were questions in the comments about Butler and Higgins. I still think they'll play both of them. I think they complement each other and it works well. Look, Butler would play for Collard and Sinclair would play for
Stocker if he's out.
your Stocker if he's out, or Seb Ross maybe, although it is his 200th game this week. Filippo, I don't think they'll drop. Windhager, I don't think they'll drop. Wilson, they certainly won't drop. Yeah, it's a difficult one to determine. I'd hate to have Seb drop 200th game at the MCG, Spuds game. But you just wonder how they balance that, Nick, in terms of getting that player out to get him in.
Yeah, look, he didn't have a great game on the weekend, but it would be stiff to drop a bloke who's 100%. Been such a stalwart for us, you know, over the last decade, to drop him on the eve of his 200th game. I imagine that he plays. I mean, Windhager's another interesting one because, you know, we saw last year, I know the hand this time around, different hand, wasn't as bad as we've heard. And I thought he kind of played a role, but I thought he still felt a little bit rusty. Didn't have the run, didn't have the tackling power that you expect from a guy who is as hard at it as Windhager is. He could be one to potentially go out if they're forced into some changes to get, you know, your Sinclair and Butler back in. I'm not sure. I do feel like, you know, there hasn't been a lot of word out of the club around Stocker. I feel like as much as he's one of the guys that we can least afford to lose, the 5-day turnaround for this one, in a corky at best and maybe something a little bit more serious at worst, might hold him out for this one and get him back in a week or so. But it really is a tough one because, you know, without Ben Patton, without Jimmy Webster, there aren't really a lot of options to be that kind of small lockdown key defender. So I hope he's good, but I kind of feel like they might play it a bit safe with him this week and bring kind of Sinclair straight in for Stocker, push Bonner back a little bit, potentially maybe push Windhager back a little bit and play a bit more of that lockdown role that we saw him play in the second half of last year. I don't think there'll be too many changes, but that's probably about it.
And hopefully Sinclair in the middle a bit more, provided the body allows it. Butler's had a good record at the MCG, so that'll be nice to look at. We'll have some final thoughts in a moment, but one segment we generally do, and that's so St Kilda. Now, to explain that again, Finey kind of summed it up when we had him on earlier, that if you look at Callum Ward's 300th game, it's against us, for example. Last year, everyone played their milestone games against us, Cochin, Buddy, everyone else for that matter. Those things that seem to uniquely happen to St Kilda, you know, rule changes after a drawn grand final, that type of thing. But I think a tweet summed it up here from David Calland. Of course, the big news in the football world is the official launch of Tasmania with the jumper. And with that came rules around father-son and zoning. Obviously, they don't have access to father-sons in the sense that they haven't had an AFL side before. But Dave says, finally, we might get a few father-sons with Nick's boys, only to have Tassie swoop in and use the exact same rule to claim them, 100-game Tasmanian-born athletes. Of course, Nick, born in Tassie, cut his teeth at Southport in Queensland, but he's Tasmanian-born and bred. And if we don't lose him to the NFL, H, we might lose him to the Devils.
Well, the question is there, is he a Queenslander or a Tasmanian? Like, if you follow the state of origin rules and that kind of thing, he's a Queenslander.
Because he was drafted from there.
Yeah, well, he played junior football there. He played, that's where he played his first rep football. Those seem to be where the rules kind of come into play in most state of origin situations. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do that because, yeah, none of his, I guess, football career was in Tasmania as opposed to Jack, who did play down there. So it'll be an interesting one to see whether they try and take that, whereas the rules might say, no, it's not. So
I think they get a choice of young lads. So hopefully they would side with Dad and hopefully Dad would side with us. Yeah,
that might be the most that's so St Kilda that we could ever imagine if that did come to pass. But I thought it was interesting during the week. I don't know if you guys follow Rui on Instagram, but there was a story or a couple of videos or something on his Instagram of him playing golf at Pebble Beach. And the three young lads, I think all in St Kilda jumpers, kicking the gridiron around, drop punt style, kicking it like an AFL ball, which was good to see. So,
yeah, the presence of that gridiron ball does worry me a little bit, though.
Well, like, there's not too many opportunities to buy a Sharon River in the States.
So. That's true. The pointy ends and broken toes. That's
Help with the if you can nail a drop punt with one of those things, then you're kicking the ball all right. It's not all a margin for error kicking a gridiron, that's for sure. But yeah, that would be so St Kilda if we were to lose out on them. I mean, they look very much like Nick, so hopefully they play footy like him as well. Final thoughts, Nick. You had one in regards to I think it was your thoughts on people calling for list changes this early.
Oh, I think I think the St Kilda fan base has a lot to be proud of after last week. You know, you mentioned Michael mentioning in the chat about the noise and the crowd intensity from the Saints fans that made it down the highway. But there is something that I think that should be called out, and there is a certain segment of the fan base calling for players to be delisted after a game, and in some cases, guys to be delisted after they weren't even in the squad for round one. Which I think is just A, bizarre, and B, probably uncalled for. I think everyone's a little bit rusty in round one at best. The way that we play in round four is going to look very different to what we saw on Saturday night. I think that that there's plenty of room to grow. We showed some flashes of good footy and showed some things to be excited about. But to call for guys, whoever it is, regardless of how they performed on Saturday night, for blokes to be delisted after round one, I think that mentality just needs to go. I don't have any time for that.
Yeah, it's a little bit. Whilst we're potting people as well, you could probably guess who they barrack for, but some of the people responding to St Kilda's lighthearted tweet about the 49 game article has been utterly embarrassing for those people. But I guess that's what we're dealing with half the time. We'll aim to have this podcast up and fully functional as per the norm for you tomorrow, hopefully. Obviously, we're playing the day after, but a reminder, you can follow us on all the socials at Unplug It on Twitter, Unplug It Podcast, Facebook, at Unplug It Podcast on Instagram, likewise for TikTok. You can find us on LinkedIn, and if you're on YouTube with us now, obviously you've got us at Unplug It there, so we appreciate you enjoying tuning into the live stream. Hopefully you've enjoyed it, and for all of the comments around that as well. If you're heading along to the MCG, hopefully plenty of noise, of course, and it is honouring Spud's game, so that will be another emotional night as well, and we'll certainly reflect on that and him again next week, as hopefully we go 1-1. The best tonic to a short turnaround and a frustrating loss would be to defeat the reigning premiers. So thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to a big one on Thursday.